When was the last time you connected with your long-distance best friend? Your mentor? Your college roommate? Nothing, not even likes and comments on social media, can replace the joy of receiving a holiday card in your mailbox. And with Minted, sending one has never looked more beautiful. Simply upload your photo, choose a card design from an independent artist, then customize the color, shape, and message. For an extra festive touch, add shiny foil accents or upgrade to colored envelopes. Eventful year? Go for a larger format or add a QR code to the back of your card to share what your family's been up to. Upload your contacts and we'll even address your envelopes for free. Check in with your people in a way that matters this holiday season. Use code PODCAST for 20% off your Minted holiday card order.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Now we have our Ask the Expert, Salat. I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Keogh, dietitian and founder of Eat Well. You're very welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Now, loads of questions as ever. Oh, and by the way, people can text in questions on nutritional matters if they want to 53106. Now, we've got a load of them. Are you ready, Sarah?
Okay, go.
So, the first one is, how much sleep do people need to help regulate their appetite?
So sleep really does have a big impact on appetite. And if you're sleeping less than 7 hours a night, we typically see people eating 150 to 300 calories extra the next day. And it's to do with changes in the hormones that regulate and control your appetite. So we know 7 is the absolute minimum, but if you can get up towards the 8, it seems to have a really nice effect. And what we also see is if you're getting that much sleep, you're likely to be more active the next day because you're not as tired. So both between the two of them actually are lovely for helping to keep an eye on weight if you need to.
Right. Strange business, isn't it? Sleep is so important.
It is. And it affects so much, you know. The whole hormonal side of it is really interesting.
Yeah. And then lots of questions on sleep for some reason. Is there anything you eat or avoid to get better sleep? That's a bit obvious. You avoid caffeine.
Well, the caffeine, yeah. I think everyone. Yeah. But you know what? People don't realize how much. So with caffeine, we don't metabolize it terribly well once we're over 40. So what would have not affected your sleep when you were younger will be affecting your sleep when you're older. So generally, if you're struggling with sleep at all, you want to drop the caffeine by about 1 o'clock.
Right.
And it's coffee, tea, chocolate, green tea. They're all foods with caffeine in them as well. So just to watch those. You know, if you're really struggling, I'd drop the caffeine altogether. And a lot of people say that they would believe they sleep well if they drink coffee, but we know when we study the brainwaves of those sleeping people, they're not actually in their deep sleep.
Right.
But to help you go to sleep, there's a couple of good foods to add in. Kiwis have been sort of around for about 15 years as being good for helping you to sleep, but recent research has actually solidly confirmed this. So if you eat 2 kiwis within about an hour of going to bed, you'll fall asleep faster, get a deeper sleep measured by kind of how your brainwaves are behaving. And you report, when people wake up, they report feeling more refreshed when they wake up. So that works really well. And there's another food you can get, which is called tart cherries, and you'll generally get them frozen or dried, and they contain some natural melatonin. So again, about an hour before sleep, having some of those, and they will actually seem to make quite a big difference to a lot of people's sleep.
I didn't know. Kiwis. Yeah. Well, who would have thought kiwis would be...
Do you know, it's one of those things. I've seen it years ago and you think, oh, here we go, another fad. But actually, the science
is just stacked up.
Yeah.
Just, you know, what about like Horlicks or these milky drinks?
So what we do
famously
know,
they were supposed
they do,
to help.
They do, and a lot of it sometimes is, to be honest, if you... And it sounds weird, a little bit of sugar, not like, you know, 5 cans of soft drinks, but a little bit of sugar is quite relaxing. Carbohydrates quite relaxing. But what you also have in milk is a little bit of tryptophan, and that's involved in making serotonin, which helps us to sleep as well.
Right. Yeah. Now, we'll move away from sleep for the moment. It says, is it true that you burn more calories from breakfast than you do from other meals? Should we all be eating a bigger breakfast? Now, I don't eat any breakfast at all, by the way.
Okay.
But it's supposed to be the most
important meal
of the
day.
Is that true?
So it's not the most important meal of the day. But what we do know is if you do eat breakfast, you get better focus, memory and concentration in the morning. So we know with a lot of the studies done in school children and students, you will definitely see them retain more information, pay more attention to that. But there's also impacts on mood. But the idea that you burn more of your breakfast and less of your dinner has also been debunked in the last one. We had a really interesting conference on what we call chrononutrition in March. And they were looking at everything from intermittent fasting and sleep and all of the rest. And they were saying just what you're... We don't really see what turns out is just changes in normal metabolism that are baseline and have nothing to do with what you're eating or not. So whether you eat your big meal in the morning or your big meal in the evening doesn't seem to make any difference.
Right. Yeah, because I say I don't eat any breakfast at all. I feel guilty, but it's probably okay. There's lots of questions coming in, Sarah. It's great. Luke and Sarah, how important is your gut and what should we do to help keep it calm? Now, obviously, things like IBS and, as we were discussing, celiac and all. Yeah. So the gut is really important to keep that, shall we call it, stable. What
and
can you do nutritionally?
With the gut, it's exposed to literally everything you eat, if you know what I mean. So we need to keep it really well looked after. The big fundamental one, which just isn't popular at the moment, though, is you need to eat fibre. And I think fibre's been around for so long. I always laugh if I give talks on this and I talk about fibre. You can actually see people starting to roll their eyes until you actually get into it and like, oh, right, I do. So 80% of people don't eat enough fibre. Fibre is what feeds your gut bacteria. So before you run out and start spending a fortune on probiotics, which, don't get me wrong, have a benefit. But if you haven't got your fibre coming in, you're wasting your time. And, you know, I'd say 60% of people who come into me with things like constipation and they're convinced they have irritable bowel or other issues, it's just lack of fibre.
It's fibre.
But there's a lot less fibre in your food than you think.
Like, what's the best source? And this is an obvious question, I guess. But if you were to say to me, eat fibre,
it's
what
not
would
one
I eat?
Thing. That's the problem. Lots of people think if I had cereal in the morning, I'm done. But your average bowl of high fibre cereal will give you 4 to 5 grams of fibre and you need a minimum of 25 a day. So you have to have fibre at every meal. So whole grain bread, whole grain cereals and your fruit and vegetables and your nuts and seeds and your beans and lentils. And you have to actually get all of it because that it is hard to get it. And I'd say if you're struggling, go and see a dietitian. I always love, we take nutrition advice absolutely from anywhere. But you know what? One session with a dietitian for something like that sorts out a lot of things. And, you know, I'd often have people coming into me with severe problems. They're like, oh, I eat loads of fibre. And you assess them, they're having 6 grams. And you're like, no, okay, so, we we'll fix it.
I presume the supplements, no, not the natural
there
food,
are
better. But you, there,
no,
there
but
are,
you see, the
fibre gel or something, isn't
the fibre gel and things like that, they're great products and I'd use them a good bit, but you're getting 3 grams of fibre from that. So again, people say, well, I take a fibre supplement, but you're still only getting maybe 3 to 5 grams of fibre from a fibre supplement and you still need 25.
Right.
So it's not going to be enough on its own. They can be really helpful, but not enough if it's your only source.
Yeah. Another question. If one is doing intermittent fasting, is it better to skip breakfast or to skip evening meal? And if skipping an evening meal, not to eat until breakfast? Then there's a bit of a complicated question.
So here's the fun thing is that this conference I was at there in March looked at intermittent fasting in detail and basically went, nah, doesn't seem to do anything.
Right.
So essentially what it does, it reduces your calories. So it's no different to any other weight loss plan. So whether you do keto, which reduces your calories, or low carb, which reduces your calories, or low fat that reduces your calories, intermittent fasting just reduces your calories. Now, if it suits you, it's a great method. Doesn't really matter whether you skip breakfast or dinner. What I would say is, though, if you are cutting out an entire meal, be really sure you're picking up the nutrients you've missed. Because that's the one thing. When I have worked with people who are doing things like intermittent fasting or time-restricted eating, they drop their fibre, they drop their protein, they drop their vitamins. So you need to really, the meals you're eating need to be really, really good if you're going to keep your nutrition up.
Right. Here's an important question. I've completely lost my appetite after menopause. I am supplementing but concerned. The thoughts of a dinner turns my stomach. Always had a good appetite before menopause. Also seriously craving sugar. Is that common?
No, menopause? It's very rare. And if you've suddenly lost your appetite, I would not be attributing it to menopause. I'd be going and getting checked out.
That's important.
Not a menopause symptom.
That's a really important.
Why am I not eating? Why has my appetite disappeared?
Yeah.
And we do have a habit around, with women in particular, that are, if you're at that menopause age, a lot of things are attributed to menopause when they're not. Like with celiac disease, there's a dip in diagnosis of celiac disease around menopause because any symptom the woman comes in with is told, it's menopause, but actually more likely to be celiac disease is the cause. So we see everything gets less diagnosed around menopause for women. So you have to stop thinking something is menopause all the time.
Right.
And losing your appetite is not a menopause symptom.
Okay.
That's a trip to your doctor.
So go and see your GP. Very important message there. Now, the next one is, I was recently informed by a friend of mine that broccoli is not a good source of iron and that avocados are not a source of omega-3. Now, this trouble this is, it gets a bit tricky, doesn't it? But the question is, what other untruths are there? I'm not aware of. There's millions. There must be loads.
I'm delighted you've talked about the broccoli one because I get that all the time. So a woman would have to eat 25 servings of broccoli a day to get their iron. And there is this unshakable belief that it's full of iron. It has a bit of iron. It's good for other things. Avocados also don't have any omega-3s. So that's the other fun fact. However, broccoli is still brilliant as it's a family of vegetables called cruciferous vegetables, which are quite good at helping to reduce risk of cancer. So they're brilliant. Avocados are lovely for vitamin E and they're just nice.
Yeah.
So they're good too. Oh God, we could do myths all day.
Another big one.
I'm trying to think now that you put me on the spot here.
That's a tricky one.
My favourite one is that butter is good for you. That seems to have really, I think it's taken storm because everybody really wants butter to be good for them. And even people who know it is. Now, butter is lovely, but it is a saturated fat. And in most people, saturated fat does raise cholesterol and is associated with quite a big increased risk of heart disease. So I'm disappointing people with that. Coconut oil also raises cholesterol. A lot of people think that that one is healthy and they're still using it. So, and the other one that I have to say particularly irritates me is coconut milk, which is lovely, but it's very, very high in saturated fat.
Really?
And I have loads of patients whose cholesterol has just suddenly gone up through the roof because it's out there. This tins of coconut milk is being a health food, and it really, really, really is.
Well, that was my assumption, to be honest. Like, I cook occasionally and you lob in a bit of coconut milk. You think it's great because it's natural. You know, it's nice.
Well, I know,
you know
the natural thing is just wonderful, but it's so funny because I have a video up on Instagram at Sarah KORD about coconut milk, and it's so funny the comments people come in on that and alcohol, anything you put up on those. People get cross.
They're flash points,
I
imagine.
Definitely.
Now, here's one. I mean, it sounds like a straightforward thing, but how bad is white bread compared to brown bread?
Do you know what? It's actually grand. People love to hate it. Look, no doubt about it, you're definitely better on the whole grains. And whole grain foods have just huge benefits in terms of fibre, but they've also other compounds in that we know reduce risk of things like bowel cancer. We know they reduce risk of heart disease. So it's really good if you can go for whole grain. If you go for white bread, what's interesting is most of the time, white bread, the flour used for it is fortified with iron and B vitamins. So surprisingly, white bread is quite a big source of iron in the Irish diet. So it's not terrible. It's one of those things now and again.
Now and again.
Do you know what I mean? It's in my house. Are we getting the yellow bread?
Yeah, I prefer white bread though.
It's a lovely texture.
It's a nice texture. But it's not bad for you though. Let's put it that way.
I wouldn't live on it, but white bread actually is, you know, a bit as grand.
Yeah. Now, another one. I am burping loudly for the past 6 months, first thing and after meals. Wonder what I should do. I usually have dinner late in the evening, about 8:30. I'm also celiac. So is this a feature of celiac?
It is. It's an interesting one. It's about 3% of people with celiac disease present with excessive burping. So a little bit of burping is quite normal for everybody during the day. But if you're getting a lot and you're really noticing it, I would have a look at celiac. It's not a common, as I said, it's about 3%, but it is. And especially if it's new. If you've kind of been a burper all your life, to a certain extent, you're like, that's probably just part of it. But something just coming on new, I'd always go and have a check-in with the doctor just to see what's going on. It could be you've suddenly got really bad reflux and it's just triggering it in the esophagus. But if you are celiac and you're getting that burping, chances are there's a bit of gluten coming in somewhere.
Right.
And even very tiny amounts of gluten can actually cause all the effects. It's a little bit like a peanut allergy in that sense, that really tiny amounts trigger it.
Well, what is burping? And that's a stupid question. It's a bit of a gas.
It's just gas buildup in the stomach and you're releasing it. So sometimes if you're eating very quickly, you will actually pull a lot of gas into it. Or if you let yourself get very hungry before you eat, the gurgling in your stomach is actually your body pulling a little bit of gas into the stomach to kind of get your attention. So fast eating, drinking a lot with meals, like if I work with people who do have a lot of burping and it's not kind of, we know it's not something sort of mechanical, we'd have a look at really slowing down eating, not letting yourself get really hungry and not drinking with meals, drink after a meal and not with it. And that can help as well.
Well, slow eating is actually very important. My dear beloved mother-in-law, sadly passed away. She was great. She would take half an hour over her dinner.
But
she would say to me, that's the way I was taught as a child, to take your time and you choose. It's important, isn't it?
And it is really good because it actually takes a while for food when you swallow to get from your mouth down to your stomach. It doesn't just land and you want to just let that happen. Yeah. But chewing your food is so important. Yeah. Like stop sending food down in big lumps and then ringing me up telling you've got indigestion. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Chew the food. You've got to actually slow down. And it's very good. You know, we have this, particularly in Ireland, we tend to eat to get it out of the way to do something else. Whereas actually you want to give it a bit of time and just sit down. But also if you eat slowly, it allows the hormones that regulate your appetite to kick in.
Right.
And you'll often find you eat a little bit less if you slow down.
Right. Another one. What is the healthiest oil to cook in then?
I would personally go with olive oil. Olive oil or rapeseed oil would be two good ones to look at. You're looking really for an oil that's high in what we call monounsaturated fats, which is a nice one. The only thing with that is that I still wouldn't be using gallons of it. There's a trend recently where people are drinking olive oil because it's good. And you're like, look, using olive oil in cooking is fine. Putting it on a salad is fine, but still in quite small amounts. They still use less oil in Mediterranean cooking than we think. And I'm always fascinated that we look at the Mediterranean diet in Ireland, and the Mediterranean diet is all about fruit and veg and fish and pulses and less red meat, and the Irish people take out of it red wine and olive oil.
That's right, the two things. Exactly. So in other words, even though what strikes me is I think olive oil is a great thing, but too much of it can be a problem.
Well, it's like all oils, it's going to be really high in calories. So you kind of want about a dessert spoon of oil for a salad or to cook with, and that's going to be plenty for most things.
Right. A couple of quick ones now that look quite important. My son's thyroid function is underactive and we're waiting to see an endocrinologist. In the meantime, are there any supplements he can start taking? drinking?
No.
Changes? None. No.
Flatly out. So generally in Ireland, if you have an underactive thyroid, it's an autoimmune disease called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. In other countries that are particularly low in iodine, you might see a thyroid problem caused by that. Now in Ireland, if you don't take dairy, chances are you're quite low in iodine because dairy is the major place where we pick up iodine in Ireland. But I wouldn't rush out and give iodine supplements without having a check with the endocrinologist to see what's going on, because too much iodine isn't good for the thyroid either. So I'd actually just hang on, see the endocrinologist and see what's going on with that.
Now, a question on salt, inevitably, okay. I presume. So, you know, Dad is on a renal diet. Any suggestions for substitutes for salt? Now, we all love our salt.
But what I would say to you, renal diets are kind of complex and fiddly because it depends on what aspects of the kidney aren't working. So when your kidney isn't clearing things out, you're often limiting things like potassium, you're limiting sodium, but you might also be limiting things like phosphate, which we'll get in things like dairy. So to be honest, I wouldn't do a whole lot of recommending on that. What I would suggest for them is to go back to the hospital because he will have a dietitian that he's working with there and actually bring the question to them because they'll have their medical notes and what his blood levels are before we give any advice on that.
Very good. Sarah, thank you ever so much. Loads of questions coming in. We haven't got time to do them all. That's Sarah Keogh, dietitian. Thanks for all your wisdom.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.